Mark May, everybody. Guy. There
Welcome
he is. Come on
Mark
in. That's Tommy. That's West. Roger over there.
Grab your chair over there, old man.
This is longtime journalist Harry King. Come on, you're right in the middle over there.
Skinny, boy. What a skinny dude.
Listen, we were talking about how thin you were.
How you doing? Good to meet you, sir.
You have a headset over there,
Mark,
Roger, for him?
Mark May now in the studios of the show with no name. A distinct honor to have him here. And when Harry, yesterday I told you, I asked my wife, is it okay? Can a guy just take a day off? Because ever since I quit drinking, I try to do something every day to remain positive going forward, whether it's vacuuming the floor or something minor like that. Yesterday I just got up and I had a bad dream. And I was like, man, I don't want to do nothing today. My wife uses a phrase, well, you've earned your keep around here. She goes, just don't do nothing. I got up to do some stretch. Sit down. And I got to where I was guilty. And I can't see Mark May doing that. I can see you doing that because you've got to move your bones every once in a while.
Once in a while
to make sure that happens. But Mark May, let me ask you, I just don't ever see you having that day where you go, I ain't doing nothing today.
He's got two kids, so he's got two daughters, too. He's on the go.
Oh, yeah. I've got two daughters. They're a little older. The one's 23. The other one's 18.
Well, do you ever have throwaway days where you do as little as possible?
No, never.
I didn't think you did.
Tell them what happened to you Saturday night, just to show you dad, super dad here. I could tell when he picked up at the airport, he was a little tired last night.
Not super dad. It's just my daughter. My oldest daughter had a flat, and she was in a bad part of town in Phoenix, so she called me instead of calling AAA, and it was like 1:30 in the morning. So I had to go take care of that, and I got home about a little after 4 or something like
How
that.
How old are your kids?
23 and 18.
Yeah, they hit 16. All of a sudden, it's a new world, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is.
When they get the keys to the car and a cell phone, and they'll talk, I promise I'll answer every time you call, Dad. Ring, ring. Ring.
Doesn't work like that.
Now, where are you from originally, Mark?
A place called Oneonta, New York. It's upstate New York. It's right outside of Cooperstown, Baseball Hall of Fame. It's about 15 miles away from Cooperstown.
How'd you wind up at Pitt versus anywhere the other schools? I know, Johnny, I guess at that time I mentioned it, the coach.
Jackie Sherrill.
Yeah. Sherrill was coaching there, right?
It was a crossover. What had happened is they'd won the national championship in 76, and Jackie had left that year and went to Washington State, the national championship year, to be a head coach there. And Johnny decided he wanted to go back home to Tennessee, where he played his college ball after the national championship. And I was recruited by Pitt at the same time. Then I was recruited by Tennessee at the same time. So it was one of those things when I was taking my recruiting trips, I had the opportunity to go to Pittsburgh, and they had just won the national championship that year. And Tony Dorsett was one of my recruiters, Cecil Johnson,
wow.
And Jake Parrish. And in that three, Hugh Green, Ricky Jackson, and myself.
Three Hall of Famers. Yeah.
And those guys said, we don't take recruits, but you guys better sign with Pitt. So it's all of a sudden, you know, we're the Heisman Trophy winner. These guys just won the national championship. And then.
At Marino.
Yeah. And Danny didn't come till later.
You played with him, though,
yes,
obviously.
Yes, played 2 years with Danny. And it was just a great visit. And meeting Jackie Sherrill, and the first time ever in Pittsburgh, you go through the tunnels for the first time, and then you come out of the other side of the tunnels, and all of a sudden, you see the city of Pittsburgh with Triangle Park. And at that time, it was Three River Stadium. And it's just amazing for the first time from a kid from upstate New York to see that and experience that. And then I had a great visit there and had a great time there. And it was one of those things that came down to, basically, it didn't come down to Penn State. Penn State always had the attitude that, hey, you're fortunate we're offering you a scholarship.
Wow.
I was like, really? Because everybody else really wants me to come there.
So did you deal with Joe Pa at all? Did you have much communication with him at all at that time, or were you dealing with assistants?
The only time I dealt with Joe Pa was when we got there for the visit, met him. And basically, you're separated from your host or your parents.
Right.
You're with the players. They're brainwashing your parents on the other side because they're showing them all the academics, what we're going to do for you. We're going to take care of him when he gets out of here. He's going to have a job if he doesn't play in the NFL. And then after that, it was one of those things where he didn't come to my hometown and talk to me personally until he found out I was leaning towards Pitt. As soon as I was leaning towards Pitt, he's in a private plane coming up to Oneonta. He wants to talk to my father again, and he wants to sit down with me. And it was like, you know, one of those things like, come on. You know, you had your chance. You blew it. I'm going elsewhere. And I made my decision to go to Pitt, and it was a good decision to make.
What a great career. Outland Trophy winner and played on that.
He's been everywhere, man.
Yeah.
And I would have to say, and I didn't like it first because you came from Pitt and you were going against Lou Holtz every week, and I bought into that shtick, judge and
Final Verdict.
That's great. That's a great bit. It's like, to me, the thing that comes on the afternoon with Lepetard. I love that show, but I think for your real hardcore sports fan, it's too goofy. It's just it's kind of like y'all, they're shtick there. But you got 24 hours a day. You can't fill it. You got to bring something, because I love Poppy, the guy that's on with Lepetard. I love him to death. Like, he gets his father on there. It's something a little different, a little bit out of the ordinary. But when you guys tried the judge and thing, that was
Reese Davis. He came up with that.
Is that Reese's
idea? Right?
Now, Reese really just likes to wear the robe. You know, yeah, that's all it is. He likes putting that robe on every Saturday, and he likes the power of standing there saying one way or the other in the verdict.
And plus, I imagine, Coach Holtz, you guys had to grow into to being able to learn. Just like Bruce and I did on that show for Sports Week for so long. You get used to sort of playing a role, and he's become very good at it.
You didn't have to get used to playing a role. You picked Arkansas every week.
Maybe so.
Simple as that. Yeah.
But Lou's got you and Lou have developed quite a chemistry.
Yeah, we have. And a lot of people have to understand that we respect each other and like each other a lot. And out of the studio and off the camera, we get along extremely well. But we'll take shots at each other, and I know how to turn them on. I know how to cut them loose. I know really where to stick them to get under his skin and tick him off. And the thing is, we're the only group at ESPN that we don't have to rehearse. We'll go into a production meeting. They'll bring up a topic. If Lou goes A and I go B, they just say, stop right there. That's where we're going to go with that.
Yeah.
And everybody else has to go and rehearse because we don't have the spontaneity. When we rehearse, we just don't get the same things, the same chemistry. So we're just like, okay, that's the deal. We're just going to go at it and just, you know.
Well, how do you determine who has to be the dummy when you ask a question where there's an obvious answer and somebody has to take the other side?
I let him have the easy questions.
You let him have the easy ones?
The thing is, he takes it personally, though. I'll tell you what, he'll come in, if he loses a case, he'll be ticked off the entire week. I'll get a text from him saying, you lied, you didn't tell the truth. And it's all because he's got all of his buddies back down there in Orlando that he plays golf with. They jump on him every week. How could you let him beat you like that? He embarrassed you out there.
Oh, wow.
He's definitely old school, but a legend. As are you, and Harry King will be back. I got in my day off, though. I'll let you know. I did 6 pages of show prep, my friend.
Very nice. Very nice.
And I have a full page.
Wow.
On the yellow pad, old school.
Awesome. That's the way to do it.
This is borrowed from Tony Kornheiser's book. I always like on PTI, he'll break out his yellow pad and put his glasses on.
Those grainy glasses.
Yeah. And ask you about some of the guys at ESPN. It's a true pleasure to have you here today and an honor to have you for the year. We've joked off and on now for 3 or 4 years. But one thing I officially want to do is welcome you to Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah. Thanks. Great being here. Having a great time so far.
Weather's good, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot cooler than I thought it was. I was checking ESPN and stuff like that and ESPN.com for the Weather Channel. So I always go through to search the Weather Channel. It was like 105 and humid here.
Well, you might want to get out in a day or two. We have in the studio with us today Mark May. There's not much Mark hadn't done to include go help his girl change a flat tire the other night.
Daddy stuff.
Hey, Daddy. Oh, man, why couldn't you be a sports reporter or something? There's never a call you get from your kid after midnight that starts out, hey, Daddy, that's a good call.
No, that's true. Nothing good happens after midnight, they say, and they're absolutely right.
That's never, hey, Daddy, I just won $1 million. No. Never happens.
From a daughter. Especially from a daughter. Those are really scary.
And it continues on into adulthood. And I wanted to ask you this while Harry was still here, because I know Harry is still forming opinions on this, and that's coaching situation at Arkansas and how that all unraveled, how it took forever to unravel. Then the party just disappeared for about 3 months. Then he came out week before last, and made an apology. Sorry. And, of course, diehard Arkansas fans are like, everybody sins. Let's forgive him and bring him back. That will never happen.
That will never happen.
Jeff Long, I think he made the right decision. I think it was a strong, powerful decision to make because I know how popular Bobby Petrino was in the state and what he's been able to do. You know, this is a team that's only lost 5 games in the last 2 years, twice to Alabama, once to Auburn. Those teams have won national championships. They lost to LSU and they lost to Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl. So you're looking at a very, very strong fan base that's extremely happy at what he'd done and the production he had on the field. But the thing is, you cannot go to your athletic director, a guy that stuck his neck out for you and brought you into this program, and you can't lie to him and tell him stories that aren't true. And I think that's where the downfall came. When Jeff went to bat for him and stood up for him in front of the media, it made him look like an idiot.
I agree. I think if he would have come out the following Monday and said, this is what I have done. Mm-hmm. I've done something horrible. I had an affair on my wife. I've had an accident. I'm taking myself off the payroll for 6 months. I've gone away. I'm going to get better. If he had done that, it might have been wholly different. But when he comes out, and the thing you said, his best friend, his best buddy up there, the guy who connived for him to get him the gig, and then he sits there in an office one-on-one and lies to him, knowing that lie's got to catch up with him. I actually think it hurt Jeff Long's feelings.
Yeah, it did. Personally, it would. Wouldn't you? If you stuck your neck out to all the alumni here.
Not in radio. It happens all the time.
Yep. But for Jeff to do that and the ethics that are involved in the situation, you can't do that. And I know sometimes you've got to take one step back to take 2 steps forward. You have to do that in this situation and move on.
Right.
And I think that when you look at the entire situation with John L. Smith, I think Jeff made a sound decision because at that point in time, where are you going to go to get a head coach? I mean, there's not going to be anybody out there that's worth bringing in that's going to leave their program at that point. So he had to do what he had to do, and it was a business decision. And if you look at John L. Smith at this point, you know, you had to bring in a guy that's a CEO, like a Mack Brown. It's not going to be out there coaching every position like a Saban or anything like that, but a guy that's going to come in, run your organization, let the coaches coach and do their job because they're used to your position coaches. As a player, you know, David, the head coach, you see him, he comes and makes a speech, he's running around the field, he's doing all these other things, but you're tied to your position coach. And you're going to have your relationship with that coach because you're spending meeting time with him most of the time. You're on the field with him. You're in that part of the field, that little section of the field over there where you're doing your drills and you're working with that coach. That's your relationship base. And to keep those guys around and keep those guys here, I think that was a great move. That foundation's still here.
You know, it's interesting, Mark, the difference, though, too, having played for a guy like Lou. Lou kept you on edge. I'm dead. You've been around Lou when he's not the most happy guy in the world. So Lou would keep you on edge.
I'm part of that.
Lou would keep you on edge during the practice week to where, you know, you were so under so much pressure during the week that when you got to the game, it wasn't that big of a deal. Different mindset here with John L. Smith. A guy's laid back, sort of funny. These kids are used to the 4 years of Petrino. You think that might be something that they might lose a little edge, not having that dictator type guy watching your shoulder knowing that
you're. Having said that, now it was the same thing when Danny Ford was here.
That's right.
He could recruit like hell. They could get the players, but it took somebody, attaboy, a player's coach, if you will, Houston Nutt, to drag him out of that shell, and all of a sudden they're 9-3 and going to big bowl games.
It still may help to have that edge and not have that with John L. Smith, but I think they'll have that with their position coaches. And I think that they're going to look at John L. He's going to give the speeches before the games and practice and stuff like that in the meetings and stuff like that, the major main team meetings. But I think as a player, you're looking at, like, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to do the best job I can when I'm on the field. And you're not worried about everything else that's out there. You're just worried about your job. You know, when you step on the field, forget all the other stuff.
Right.
You know, because if you don't do your job, somebody's going to get injured, or you're going to look bad, or you're not going to be playing.
Right.
So your focus is out there doing your job. And you're out there to play, and you're out there to try to win. And I think for the players, I think they've gotten over that. That's behind them right now. And I think right now it's just focusing on the first opponent, then the second opponent, and taking them one at a time, and just doing what you're here on scholarship, but you're here because of your football ability. So go out and do what you're here for. Play football, play great football, and win games. And looking at their schedule with the talent that they have, you know, my opinion is they've got three really tough potholes, but two of them are at home. They get Alabama and LSU at home, and they've got to travel to South Carolina. You know, all the other games are definitely going to be favored in. Auburn may give them a challenge, but the rest of those games, they're going to be favored in. And a lot of those games, double-digit favorites. So those players know, you know, players aren't stupid. With the internet now, you know, it's not like us in our day. We had to read newspapers to find out we're favored by 10 points this week. You knew it as a player. You're going in there, you feel a little bit better. But if it's like a 1.5 point, you're like looking at each other, we got a tough game coming up. So I think the players will go out there, and they know how to win. They know what's expected of them. And I think that it's going to be drilled in them, and they've played well. I've read all the reports that are coming up, the way they practiced the last couple of weeks. I think they're coming around.
Didn't you call the spring game last year?
Yes.
At Fayetteville.
Yeah, and it was big transition between now and then. That was everybody's rolling. It was the Sugar Bowl too.
That was when that happened. Wasn't it? It was around that time. I guess it had just happened.
No, this was the past year.
Oh, that was
the previous
2 years before. Yes. Okay, that's what I was thinking. Yeah,
and then they go to the Sugar Bowl. We were down there covering the Sugar Bowl because we usually try to get out the one BCS game before we do the national championship game. So, you know, you saw the talent base there. You're on the sidelines, had a chance to talk to Petrino and his assistants and a lot of the players that are there. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you thought this program, because when Jeff Long came here, you thought that you could feel the excitement and the enthusiasm. But now on that national basis, having a spring game on television and going to the Sugar Bowl, and you get Ryan Mallett and you got all the players that they had, and now all of a sudden they're not an afterthought in the SEC West. All of a sudden they're a player. And not only in the SEC West, they're a player nationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and – whether it hurt or helped the program with Bobby Petrino, Arkansas's name was everywhere for a long time. And, you know, at least that name recognition is there nationally now.
That, of course, is who we will speak about later. I had to hit this, though. It just crossed my mind. We were talking about Kirk Herbstreit off the air and how he's a good guy and all that. Of course, people in Arkansas think they think everybody at ESPN has a bias against them.
Although Mark picked Arkansas, I think, about every game last year, almost.
Yeah.
Well, there's no bias. That my whole point is that's ridiculous. What happened to Aaron Andrews and Michelle Beadle?
They moved down to other networks, and sometimes that happens quite often in the business. And at ESPN, I'm sure they're sad to see them go, and, you know, they had opportunities elsewhere. With the networks out there coming into college football, they're seeing that it's a huge pie, and now they want to get a piece of it because ESPN's controlled it for so long. At ESPN, we broadcast over 450 games a year on all of our platforms. It's ESPNU, ESPN2, ESPN Classic, We've got a lot of avenues to broadcast a lot of games, and we've got the rights to a lot of games. And what happened was Fox and NBC right now, NBC is just fighting to get anything because they've got their NBC package now. They're trying to fill their programming, and Fox is trying to do the same thing. And they wanted to make a statement, so they go out and they try to get named people and people that are identified. They identify with Michelle Beadle and obviously Aaron Andrews.
Yeah.
And they think they can make a big splash with that, and hopefully they can get ratings early.
Well, that stuff in the afternoon is fun stuff, and I thought I would when Beadle left, I swore I'd never watch the show again. But her replacement's been just fine. It's another fun show where they'll drag people in off the street to the coach. Yeah. It's just a fun show.
That's why when I'm done with my shows there, I go back to my hotel room and I turn my cell phone off.
So
they don't drag me in.
Hey, Mark, we need you for a sit-in.
Are you happy doing what you're doing? Do you want to do some different things, call more games, or do
it's tough with my schedule, Dave. And here's the reason why. It's because I'm in there I leave home on Wednesday and come back on Sunday. And when I do games, when I used to do those midweek games with Reese and Coach Holtz, they were more for Reese. Reese asked us to do the games because he wanted to work on his play-by-play. Well, Reese is so good, he didn't need us. He didn't need to do that. From the first time he did a game, it was like, this guy, he doesn't need us. I think he's the best in the business. Mm-hmm. He can go in, he can call, he can do any sport at any time. He's one of those few guys at ESPN, doesn't use a teleprompter. He can go in and do any sport at any time. And they can call him, he can do NASCAR, he can do baseball. Yeah. You know, he's just one of those guys, he's extremely gifted and he works extremely hard. Mm-hmm. And then when Reese got the Thursday night gig, it was like, okay, I'm not going to do that many games during the week because I don't go home. You know, and if I do go home, I go home on a Sunday and I have to leave on a Monday if it's a Tuesday night game. So for me, there's really no benefit in that. And then I'm working all the way through the weekend on my boards, on my interviews with coaches, interviews with players just for that game, besides all the other things I do during the week to get ready for the shows during the week. So it's too taxing during the year. And if there's a big game during the week, like a major game the last couple of years, if there's like a big conference playing on a Wednesday, like if there are two good Big East teams that are playing, I'll do those games. If it's close enough where I can fly to Bristol and get a nonstop the next day. But otherwise, no. You know, I've done other sports in the past, and the only passion I had was horse racing, and we don't carry it anymore. I used to own race horses.
Really?
Now you've got me interested.
Yeah, I had a couple horses racing in Hamilton, you know, and harness horses.
We got a track right around the corner down here.
Yeah, my mom lives down there, so we can stay over there and grab something to eat.
Now we hear from them now.
I didn't want to get in the way. I didn't want to get in the way of what was going on. I got to ask you about, have you done any research this year because of Gus Malzahn at ASU?
I talked to Gus at the spring. He was out at the Waste Management Open, and we just talked a little bit about football, and I congratulated him on getting the job and his opportunity, and he's extremely happy there, and it's a good avenue for him, and it's a good opportunity. Obviously, the last few years, he's been in some big places. He's won a national championship at Auburn. His name's come up in some other bigger schools and bigger programs, but I think you look at the track that Hugh Freeze was on. He got the Ole Miss job in the SEC. If Gus goes there and he wins the next couple of years and does extremely well there, he's going to get his opportunity down the road, and he's always going to have that opportunity. But it's going to be difficult. And I heard you earlier. You're talking about their first couple of games.
Yeah.
Man, rest your starters, Gus. Keep those starters for when you get back in conference because it's going to be tough. And those are big check payday games, and we all know that. And it's going to be difficult for them to win. But I think he's going to do well there. He's got that attitude when you talk to him. He seems extremely happy with his opportunity, and he's really eager to get out there and to coach. And, you know, that's good. You like to see that in coaches. You like to see that twinkle in their eye where they want to get out there and coach, because a lot of coaches are like, well, this is just a stepping stone to something else. He's excited about being head coach.
Mark's going to be speaking at the Touchdown Club today at the Peabody Hotel. You can still, if you didn't RSVP, you can still walk up and get a ticket at the door. So just give yourself plenty of parking. Lunch is from 11 to 12. The program is 12 to 1.
We appreciate the Touchdown Club bringing in Mark to be a part of the show, to be a part of the Touchdown Club. And all year long, Edwards Food Giant and Firestone Complete Auto Care.
Our sponsor for Mark Messick.
How about that?
All right.
There's your sponsor, brother. There's your sponsor right there. Since I still got we still got Harry here for a couple of seconds, I've written down just a couple of generic questions. In your mind, top two or three greatest college football coaches ever?
I would say right now, if I was an athletic director and I want to hire one guy right now, Nick Saban. You have to. Because not only the way that he recruits, the way that he develops those players and gets them to the next level and makes those players play hard, extremely hard, focus on what they do. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They play extremely well when they get to the next level. You look at the next level, all his players are out there playing someplace in the NFL. All time, you have to still look at Bear Bryant, what he's been able to do. Just wins alone. Yeah, throw in Joe Paterno, but you really have to put a caveat in that on what had happened at Penn State in the program, so you have to leave that one alone.
Yeah.
And I think Pete Carroll, for a short period of time, he was a bright, burning star. I mean, just think about it. He was one of those guys that he failed in the NFL, didn't think he could make it in college as a head coach, and in a short period of time, what he was able to accomplish at USC, I mean, that was huge. I mean, they were the talk of college football for about 6 or 7 years.
You probably don't want to be on record, but your co-host is up there in that list, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Can anybody do?
Yeah.
Well, Lou's the last coach to win a national championship at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And all the wins that he's had and the accomplishments he had, and he's just been so many places that he's won wherever he's been. Yeah. You know, Minnesota, Arkansas, North Carolina State, Notre Dame, South Carolina, he's been able to win wherever he's gone. So you'd have to put him in that category when you break it down. But there's probably about 10 coaches that you could make a case and say, well, he did this
year.
But certain coaches you identify with one program. With Lou, he's going to be identified with Notre Dame because he won the national.
Right.
Until somebody wins a national championship at Notre Dame, they're always going to say, last coach to win a national championship at Notre Dame.
And you're not a fan of Notre Dame, right?
They're all right. Hey, you know what? I went there a couple of years ago and did his golf tournament and speech and stuff like that, and I thought I was going to have to wear Kevlar.
Because the Notre Dame fans don't like
they
you.
They did not like me. And then I kind of won him over, and now they invite me back every year, and it's like, I fell into the trap last year of picking Notre Dame to win 10 games. I'm not falling for it this year. They got a rough schedule this year.
Are you excited about Robert Griffin being your quarterback of the Skins?
I know what direction we're going with this. Yes, I am.
You know,
and when they play the Cowboys, they better look out.
I know he's looked good so far.
I thought he looked good.
Griffin's fine.
The first game he was awesome. The second game a little shaky.
Would you rather have Griffin or Romo?
Oh, Griffin.
He's just saying that because his buddy's sitting right beside him. That's all that is.
He knows what he's talking about.
Why don't you back
up? I want to ask you real quick. Why did you select being a college analyst over a pro analyst? And are the Cowboys your most hated team?
The reason why I chose college is I used to do the NFL. When I was at TNT, I did the NFL. When I was at CBS, I did the NFL. I did like one college game a year. I wanted other opportunities, and I was told at that time at CBS when my contract was up that I could do other things, and they never let me do those things. And I said, I'm going to go to ESPN for an interview. And they said, you're never leave network for cable. Well, 13 years later, it's my 13th year there. So I've been there, and ESPN's allowed me to do both, college and NFL. But I get more excited doing college football, more of a passion for it. The NFL's easy. 32 teams, 50 guys a team, that's nothing. College football, you got 120, 124 teams. You've got 100 guys a team.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
And your true feelings about the Cowboys.
You know, I hope they continue to beat the Cowboys and get to the playoffs. And, you know, I can't believe this is the first Cowboy. And, you know the movie Roadhouse?
Yes.
Where they keep saying, I thought you were bigger?
Yes.
And his name is Dalton.
And out it comes. The fighting has begun. Harry, we wondered about how he's feeling last week. He played 90 holes of golf last week.
It took me almost 4 days. Come on.
I don't think I could play 90 holes of golf.
No. Well, I'm going to struggle to get 18
in
today.
Town, you got a chance to beat him out of $2, you bet.
Absolutely. Yeah. Greatest athlete you ever played with, Mark May?
Played with?
Yep.
That's a good question. I probably have to say Hugh Greene in college for sure. And in the NFL, Dexter Manley. Dexter Manley was a freak when he came to the NFL. He was 6'3", 255, ran a 4.5 40, and this is back in 1981. He was on the kickoff team. Coverage team.
Yeah,
he was killing people. They had to take him off the team.
You bring up a point that my wife brought up. We were watching games last night. There was a head-to-head flag.
Mm-hmm.
When are we going to reach a point, if we haven't already reached the point, where we're going to have to just throw up our hands and go, hey, that's football. I mean, we're doing everything we can, but you cannot eliminate that from football totally. Because, like the guy said, the play that brought it up, the guy was about to get hit, and he was about to get hit, and he ducked over like that, kind of in a protective mode, to cower or whatever you will, to protect his body. And that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
If somebody's coming to me, I'm going to kind of go like that. What do you see happening? Because that in the offseason, aside from all the Penn State and all the other crap that goes on, that was a big deal.
Yeah, it definitely is, and they've got to let the guys play. It has to come to a point where the players have to be cut loose and let them play. If it's a dirty, cheap shot, penalize the guy, fine the guy if it's the NFL. But I know they're trying to protect the player, and I understand that. But it comes to a point where if you're going to go up and hit somebody and they're going to protect themselves, when you're going to a head-to-head hit, and if both players are changing their angle right at the last second, what are you going to do? When you're playing that fast,
right.
And if you're on the field, you can see how fast those guys are at field level, you can't get out of the way. And if a player is going to make a tackle and the offensive player lowers down and he gets hit head to head, it's a penalty on the defense.
Well, I hearken back because I'm an old guy to the days of, say, the mid '60s when it happened all the time. And the point there being, they're not bench pressing, or they weren't bench pressing 400 or 500 pounds back then. They were probably running around carrying tires and carrying bricks. They didn't even have a weight program, so it's a totally different monster.
It definitely is, and it really started basically my era when I came to the NFL. under Joe Gibbs, he was really one of the first coaches that implemented a full-time weightlifting year-round program. And the other team started to follow suit at that time. And before that, when I came in, there was the old guard, and then I was part of the new guard. And the old guard in the offseason, those guys had jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, they worked in real estate, they were car salesmen, they had two jobs. And I'm like, this is the NFL? You know, they didn't even work out in the offseason. We came to the minicamp, they thought it was a joke to come in and goof around and see each other and have a couple beers and go out on a practice field and do a walkthrough. Joe Gibbs came in and he changed that mentality. I mean, it was strictly business from that point on. So when you see guys today that are bigger, stronger, and faster, they're always going to continue to get bigger, stronger, and faster. That's just the way it is.
Can you relate to the players who have just retired who say, yeah, I'd like to play a couple more years, but it's that summer camping crap to get to me. I'm a finder.
This is what kills me, and it drives me nuts. When I went to summer camp, we went for 8 or 9 weeks, practiced 2.5 hours per practice twice a day, for 8 or 9 weeks, had two scrimmages, then we scrimmaged the Steelers, then we scrimmaged the Colts, then we got the preseason. We had full pads on and full contact. I go to NFL camps today, the guys are wearing shells.
I got it easy.
They're not even full pads, they're wearing shells and there's no contact. Oh, we only do contact like one practice a week. It's like, then how do you get ready to play football? You can't get callous to the hits. That's
you really can't
do that.
Judge them for the fourth week.
Yeah, and then when I talk to some of the guys, oh, we had a really tough camp. It's like, you went to camp for 3 weeks. You had what? 3 days of full contact? That was it? We had that in 2 days.
What is the biggest thing wrong with college football today?
I think the hypocrisy, the things that have gone on in Penn State, the things that happen off the field. I think college football is a tremendous game. Ratings go up every single year for us at ESPN. The enthusiasm, the excitement that's there. But some of the things that has happened at Penn State that have gone on for years, and some of the things off the field to play that drives me nuts, and some of the things the NCAA has done in the past, now with Mark Emmert, they mean business. You know, what he came out and what he said after the free report against Penn State, I think the NCAA, everybody's walking around a little scared right now.
Yeah.
Because they better start toeing the line. And I think that's the best thing. And if he holds court and continues to stay on that line, I think football in the NCAA is going to be a cleaner sport down the road.
And do you think the actions that Arkansas took, that somebody else stepped with the LSU guy,
Tyrone Mathieu.
Yep.
And I said earlier today, I'm giving that kid a big attaboy. If his dad or whoever stepped in and said, no more handouts from daddy, no more, you're going to get this problem fixed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And him saying, okay, I'm not playing football this year. I may not even go to school.
Yeah.
I'm getting this taken care of. At 20 years of age, I admire that. As someone who's gone through something very similar, I admire the hell out of that.
Yeah, I tweeted out that day. I said, good for you, Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah.
You know, go get your personal problems taken care of first before you worry about football. And I said, congratulations, good luck, and best wishes to you. It's always darkest before the dawn. And I hope he gets his problem taken care of because he's a nice young man. I've met him before. He's got to get this straightened out. And at that age, at 20 years old, with everything that he had, Heisman Trophy finalist, played in a national championship, All-American, won the Bignarik Award, was SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Everything that he had going, he's on just about every cover of just about every sports college magazine. For him to step up at this time, and I know it took him to get kicked off the team and the third time to be tested positive, but for him to do what he did now and to stand up and say, I need help, I got to get help, and for his family to say, you need to get straightened out first, I think that's nothing but kudos for that young man.
Sure.
Because he's 20 years old, and to make that tough decision that he and his family had to make, you know, you've got to admire that young
man. Do you think 7, 8 years ago it might have been swept under the carpet?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think there's still some programs out there that continue to do that because some coaches are worried about protecting their jobs. And I think, you know, with the Trussell situation, I mentioned it before in other situations, with athletic directors taking the hard stance and the tough stance saying, you know what, we're not taking this anymore. You know, it's in your contract that you're supposed to do these things, and if you don't do them and stand up and fill your obligations, we're going to get rid of you.
I am going to turn it over to my esteemed colleagues, Mr. Media and Mr. Cowboy, in just a second to let you chew him up and reason with him.
What?
Well, I mean, come on. I'm still waiting on the phone to ring for somebody to tell me the most overrated franchise in the...
We all agree.
USC,
most disappointing.
Last year, probation. This year, they start the season number one. It's one of those things that makes you want to go, is it worth going on probation for a couple of years, and the third year you're rated number one?
But remember, it's preseason, and that's just what the prognosticators pick. And you look at these guys, and They've got a lot of talent. They've got a great quarterback. The only thing that may hold them up is their depth and their coaching. I looked at USC, and it's not worth the price that they paid. I think that Pat Hayden has done a terrific job as athletic director there also. But I don't think I'd rather go through those depths just to get back to where you used to be. You know, that's a lot that they – that's a big price that they had to pay.
Well, somebody did a hell of a job out there in maintaining, and then when they become eligible, they're number one, and I'll leave it at that, and I will you guys have at him now. I just want to say you don't know how flattered and honored I am. I watch you guys every Saturday until – well, sometimes 4:30 in the morning, it seems like. But
wait till this year. we have now a contract with the Pac-12 that they're going to start kicking off at 10:30 every Saturday night. So we'll be in studio till 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, dude,
that
is the most bizarre thing that they're going to make them stay in studio.
I would not want to be hanging out with Lou Holtz at 3:30 in the morning.
He might be a little grumpy. I did want to say, too, Mark, we want to thank our sponsors, Edward Food Giant and Firestone Complete Auto Care, for sponsoring Mark's segment throughout the year.
Absolutely.
A couple things from the Touchdown Club. Some people have asked how much are tickets. If you want to join for the whole year, it's only $50. Cheap. I mean, unbelievable, yeah. Mark, how cheap
even
that is.
Even I've thought about paying for that.
Take down with those alligator arms.
Lunch is, wow.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Lunch is $15 if you're a member, $25 if not. So, again, there's still tickets available if you want to walk up today at the Peabody Hotel. A couple of fan feedbacks. Mark May is great, one of the best in college football. Hey, Mark, I want a helmet sticker, which is another great bit. That is a great bit on the show. A couple things I was going to ask. You mentioned players you played with. Who were some of the great players you played against, maybe the hardest guy you ever had to block in either college or pro?
Well, I played in the NFC East. And back through the 80s in the NFC East, if you went through that grinder and you came out and you won that conference, you're either playing for a Super Bowl or you're at least getting close to that. And every year it was either the Giants or the Redskins or back and forth. And the two players that were toughest for me were Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White.
You had to that's pretty much tops the list.
Now, when Lawrence Taylor used to come to my side, because he used to switch sides a lot and flip-flop, we designated him as Rover, I used to kick and step on his hands and poke him and punch him at the bottom of the pile because I did not want him on my side. If he comes over and gets a sack, he's going to stay over here.
Now, you play with Schlereth. Is he as crazy as he appears?
Oh, yeah. That guy's lost his mind. He's had about 30 surgeries. It's amazing. The thing is, he used to be able to bench press about 500 pounds because he got these short, stubby little arms.
Yeah.
He could just, like, put it on there and just bang, 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 bang. And then his father came in one year in the offseason, and his father was about 45 at the time. His father's, like, bench pressing, like, 400 pounds.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. It's like both these guys were, like, cut out of, like, a block of granite.
Well, I thought, you know, when you mentioned Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White, two of the greatest to ever play the game, I thought there might be a Cowboy that you would throw in there that was a was there anybody on the defensive line for the Cowboys at the time? Of course, you guys were winning Super Bowls. I guess nobody had known.
Oh, my gosh. You're a Cowboy.
I'm just asking him.
Randy White and I had a standing feud for about 9 years.
Another great player.
Randy White and I had a standing feud for about 9 years.
Not as great as he thinks.
Oh, wow.
Let us say this. We were at a meeting in the offseason, and that's when they took, like, a representative from each team, and the NFL had this big meeting where they bring you the new drug policy and stuff. We were in a meeting room in Minnesota, and they sent a representative from each team. So I'm sitting there. There's one chair left in the meeting room. Randy White comes in late, stands by the door. Wouldn't take that seat next to me.
Wow.
And this was, like, probably seventh or eighth year I played against him. And we didn't talk until about 7 or 8 years ago in New Orleans. They had the Super Bowl. We were in the airport and passed each other and just gave each other a glare and then just stopped and just shook hands and said, and that was the first time we had a civil war.
Wow, really? That's how bad how intense it was.
On the field back then? Oh, talk about spitting and kicking and calling each other names you wouldn't even imagine that would burn the hair off the back of your head.
Well, I mean, that's funny because the piece of paper that you just slid over there to me that said, I really love the Cowboys, it's just stink. It's what
Let me tell you what, I wouldn't wear a Cowboy jersey if Jerry Jones paid me $1 million.
Listen, and you know what? I don't blame you.
I've heard that at the bottom of pileups now, Tony Romo will be heard to utter nana nana boo boo.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
You know, it's either going to be he's going to get injured, or it's going to be a pivotal game where something has to be done by the offense.
Yep.
He's going to turn the ball over or make a bonehead mistake.
I agree. We should be better friends than that, Mark. I agree with that. I mean, and do you think this is it for him? Is this the year?
You hypocrite.
I've always said this is it for Tony Romo. If he doesn't do something,
I thought you picked on the coach.
Now, wait, and don't even get me started going back to Campo.
I'll put it this way. If Bill Parcells couldn't fix him, nobody can.
Fix Romo?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jerry Jones loves him too much. He says he's a great athlete. He's a great pool player. He's a great golfer. He's a great this. How about a great quarterback? Even though his numbers have been up there, and he's a great fantasy quarterback, but I can't survive on fantasy Super Bowls. I can't do it.
Maybe he should spend more time playing football than playing pool and playing golf. I concur. And doing all the other things.
I agree with that.
Now, looking at Mark, too, he's sitting next to Roger. He could put Roger in his. His hand is so big. It may be the biggest hand I've ever seen. Basically, Roger just jumped in his palm a minute ago. You're what, 6'6"? How much weight you carry now?
Now about 245.
And when you played, you were 300.
Jiminy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He's so slim. I got a chance to play against Steve Wallace and Lomas Brown. Mm-hmm. And when you guys are, you know,
yeah, Lomas,
300
Lomas
pounds.
Is still big.
No, yeah, he broke my back. Tommy made the point, though. You feel better now that you've lost that weight, not carrying around all that extra, you know,
yeah,
60, 70 pounds.
I do. I've had a couple surgeries over the years to correct some things, like my knees and elbows and stuff like that. And I feel much better health-wise because I still work out every day.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you do hobbies? You're active besides working out. Do you fish? Do you hunt?
I used to fish a lot, and I used to go to Cabo a lot, and it's kind of fished out for tuna now. I used to go like once a year, and now it's just you can get marlin there because it's catch and release. But I'm a catch and eat type person, so there's not a lot of tuna anymore down there.
Guilty
and,
pleasure that you like to do, eat, hang out, get casual, relax.
I like to cook, believe it or not. I've written a cookbook years ago, Mark May's Hog Cookbook.
No, you did not.
Yeah, look it online. There's Tales of the Redskins, my book that I've written, and Mark May's Hog Cookbook I wrote in 83.
Roger, you need to get that cookbook. And Tommy's a big-time cook. He loves to cook. I haven't cooked a meal in 27 years. I'm a single guy.
Corn. What if you were going to throw out your ace dish? Because mine's pork chops, mashed potatoes, gravy, black-eyed peas, and greens.
I'm a big steak guy. I do a lot of marinating steaks, put them on the grill and stuff like that. I make a lot of pasta with seafood. Most of the time when I cook, it's usually like I'll just tell my wife that I'm just going to cook. It all depends how many kids are in the house. It's just,
do you clean
just
up?
No. That's the thing. If I'm cooking, I ain't cleaning.
Now, that's why we eat a lot of microwave dinners now. That cleaning up stuff is for the birds. Well, especially when you get to the point where you're just cooking for two people.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, too, a guy that's obviously familiar with Arkansas. He was one of Coach Brewer's assistant coaches. And I do want to say I appreciate you always plugging. You usually plug the Brewer's Award, and that's something that originated out of the state. But
Mr. Media right there.
Joe Gibbs is an Arkansas guy. What was it like playing for Joe Gibbs back in the day?
It was an honor, obviously. I was Joe Gibbs' first pick as a head coach. And
first-round draft choice.
First-round draft pick from the Washington Redskins. And the first year, he had a tremendous staff. First year, we started off 0-5. A lot of people forget about that.
Wow.
And Joe and that crew thought they were going to get fired because Mr. Cook, that owned the Redskins, they had to go out every Monday and report to him at his estate in Northern Virginia. And he was a little crotchety, mean guy, but he loved the Redskins. Anything the Redskins wanted to win, he would get. So we turned it around after that point. We won 8 out of our next 11 games. Following year, went to a Super Bowl and won. Following year, went to a Super Bowl and lost. And that's when the legacy of Joe Gibbs really created in the NFL and the things that he was able to accomplish. But playing for Joe, it was one of those things where it was kind of funny because we used to nickname him Sybil, because those coaches would stay there 22 hours a day. So they'd basically sleep in their offices. So you'd come in the morning, and all of a sudden you see Coach Gibbs coming down the hall. He had his coffee, he'd be coming down the hall looking around. I'd start ducking because you don't know if he was in a bad mood or a good mood because he'd be up all night.
Wow.
Then all of a sudden he'd just walk by you in a daze and wouldn't even recognize you because he's thinking about plays and he's tired from the night before. And then he'd walk up to you, and all of a sudden, you know, 2 weeks later, he'd walk by, and I'd do my little duck thing. He started like it was like a game. He'd like come up and start talking to you, and it's like, okay, one day is he going to talk to me or is he going to stay away from me? But that was just his personality, and you knew whatever he was going to do, he was going to be successful, and he would work harder than anybody else to have success at it. That was one of the things I learned from him that I was so impressed by him, because he didn't care if he had to stay there every single day, and it hurt his health at the end. That's one of the reasons why he got out of the game, and you knew that he was going to make it. And the thing is, when he left and went to NASCAR, everybody said, oh, what's this? This is nuts.
Yeah.
So the first year he wins the Daytona 500.
Yeah.
You know, so the guy kind of knows what he's doing, and he has a plan for what he's doing, and he executes it, and he carries it out. And I'll tell you what, he will put every ounce of strength he has. If he believes in something, he'll make a way to find a way.
Did you play with Riggins, too? Did you ever?
Oh, yeah.
Was he crazy?
Oh, yeah. Nut.
Oh, yeah. Riggo was one of those guys where usually – you would have another player pick you up and you drive to work together. Well, John had his own coach that would come and get him to make sure he was on practice and be at the meetings on time. And Coach Don Bro, he's a Louisiana guy.
I spent time at Arkansas too.
Yeah. And he would be there and he'd go pick up John sometimes and make sure that he was there on time because he was responsible for him. And
y'all were lethal with that offensive line you had, Riggins was running the ball. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot different back then. We were the first big offensive line until that point in time. There are very few lines that averaged over 250 in the NFL. We averaged like 290, and we carried that tradition on. And, you know, there are the young Hogs, the original Hogs, and then the Hogs now. And it was one of those things that we had a lot of success under Joe Bugel, our offensive line coach.
Oh, he's a great Hall of Famer coach. Yeah. Who were the other offensive linemen on there?
The original Hogs, it was George Stark, myself, Russ Grimm.
Russ Grimm, yeah.
Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Jeff Bostic, Joe Jacoby.
Wow, Jacoby, all those guys, yeah.
So it was a good group, and George is the older guy, and the rest of us were young. We were, you know, the three of us were rookies. We came in at the same year. Bostic was the only guy that played in the NFL. He had 1 year. He went to Philadelphia and got cut, and then he came to Washington, and he ends up being the starter the following year. So you had four young guys on the line that were like 23 and under, and then you had George Stark that was like 32. So he kind of basically he took the lead of the group, and he was the head hog, and, you know, we had a lot of success with that and a lot of fun. And you know, I went to 3 Super Bowls in my first 6 years in Washington.
That's amazing. Wow. 3 Super Bowls in your first 6 years in the league. You get sort of spoiled doing that, don't you?
Well, my second year in the league, we go to the Super Bowl and win. I'm thinking, oh, we're going to do this all the time. Then all of a sudden, I'm looking at guys in the locker room. They bring in, like, Tony McGee from New England at the time. He was a defensive end. He's like, you know, I played in the league 12 years, and I've never been, you know, to the second round.
But I wore a shirt in your honor today.
I see the hog.
Hog.
Oh, we let the hogs out. I saw that. Well,
it fits perfectly with that. You were a hog, and we have a lot of hogs.
And there's no amount of money Jerry could give you to wear a jersey.
In public, probably not.
Okay. Oh, well, all right. I understand that.
Now, that's the answer to your question from now on. In public?
That's right. Exactly. Sober?
Looking at the Razorbacks real quick, I know you got to go. Just quick impressions of the overall team.
I think there's a lot of talent. Obviously, they talk about the offense. I think the defense, the new defensive coordinator, when you look at what they did last year in the Cotton Bowl, I thought they were a little impressive because Kansas State can run the ball and they can pound you. And that was one area they were really soft at last year. I think they were 74th in run defense. The offense, Nile Davis, if he comes back healthy, we don't know because he hasn't scrimmaged yet. So that's one key. If he's healthy, they're going to be extremely deep and talented at the running back position.
Uh-huh.
They look at the quarterback, you know, Tyler Wilson. I think that you look at him and, you know, the world's out there for him. He can do anything he wants with the football. The first scrimmage, apparently, they didn't play that well. The second scrimmage, he was outstanding the other day. And he's a leader. He's been there. He's done it. And I said it on the air last year. The kid is a tough, mentally, physically football player. When he took the shots with that young offensive line last year and he kept getting up off the ground, it was almost like watching Rocky.
Yeah.
He was taking it and he just wouldn't give up. He just continued to get up and lead this team. Now this offensive line has more experience. You look at Bray Cook, he's just a sophomore. Started as a freshman in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Did a pretty good job as a freshman. I mean, he's going to be better as a sophomore.
A lot of hopes hinge on the running back now, Davis, and his return.
Well, they're deep there. You've got Wingo and some other backs.
Yeah.
And Johnson, they're going to be fine there. And Nile Davis, last time we saw him, was basically a 1,300-yard rusher.
Okay, the big question among Razorback fans, say John L. Smith goes 10-2, his contract 10 months comes up. Is there any way you can say, now, get out of here?
If he goes 10-2, that means he beats everybody but probably LSU and Alabama. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they're competitive in those games. They should probably get a BCS nod if they, you know, if things go right, they probably wouldn't. They'll probably be back in the Cotton Bowl. I would say you'd have to look at the situation closely.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to find out who's available.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get that big name splash guy to come in here, you got to get him.
Yeah.
Because there's certain windows that you have to be able to make sure that you can get that guy in that time frame. And if you wait on that guy and don't get him then, when will you get him?
Yeah.
So it's a situation where if Jeff Long, the athletic director, decides that guy's out there, you got to go get it.
Would you roll the dice on an assistant coach like a Kirby Smart, like a Florida did with Muschamp, or would you go, no, need to be an established head coach?
I think with a job like this, Arkansas has earned the privilege and the right to go out and get a big-name guy.
If
there's one there. And the thing is, are you really going to bring in an assistant coach that hasn't been a head coach and put him in the SEC in this position? You know, when you've got the Nick Sabans out there and you've got, you know, guys that have won national championships and Steve Spurrier's out there
but it's hard to get those. People are making so much money now, Mark. There's not much shifting going around. You know, look at TCU and Boise State. Those guys have been after those guys forever. Used to be they would leave, but they're making enough money, they're happy now.
The number one in a million rule chance was John Gruden. You'd hear his name pop.
No.
Does John Gruden have any aspirations of coaching anywhere, anytime? Because he's got a cush gig, and he wears whatever he wants to work. he's got a sweatsuit on and a baseball cap, and he comes to work and interviews the best quarterbacks in the country.
Well, John was double-dipping there for a while, but I think that ran out with Tampa, where he was getting a check from the Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that kind of ran out. So in a couple of years, he may be looking at it. I think he just signed a five-year extension with us. They love what he does on Monday night, and I'm very impressed. He's done a terrific job. I'm a big fan of his, and I don't think he would take a job like that because he's had opportunities the last few years to take any NFL job that's come up.
Yeah,
you know, why would you go to college if you could take any NFL job that's out there? He's not going to do that
because John Daly texted him. That's the only thing I.
But,
can
he, but he's happy at ESPN. You know, he doesn't have to work. You know, 11 and a half months a year. He can take like a month off in the summer.
He doesn't have to sleep in his office.
Yeah, that's true. He just sleeps on the Gruden bus now.
I just don't know how college or pro coaches' marriages survive because of 14, 15 weeks out of the season. You hear a lot of them say, "I just sleep in my office."
Yeah, it's tough on a lot of coaches and a lot of families. But the thing is, that's what you go into, and you know, even as an assistant coach, what the hours are. So wives know what's going on, and the family knows that, you know, dad's not going to be home. He's going to be traveling. He's going to be home at a certain time. You learn to carve out quality time with your family and make sure that you stick to your rules and say, okay, these days I'm available. Let's do this. We're going to go here. We're going to take a vacation here, go here for a weekend, or go to Vegas for the family for the weekend and something like that. And that's what I've always done. I always made sure when I had free time, if they had free time, there was always something that we could do that they'd had fun and experienced that they could remember going to Disneyland. I took them, actually, my wife was visiting her family. I took the girls to Disneyland. I just said, okay, we've got like 4 days off. We're going away. They didn't even know.
Good daddy.
You know, got off the plane and we were in Disney.
Speaking from experience, just remember if the phone rings after midnight and it's one of your kids, let your wife answer the phone.
The thing is, she did and woke me up.
Mom's not changing the tire, though. That's not going
to
happen.
Well, we certainly welcome you, Little Rock. Welcome you back to the Buzz and look forward to working with you.
It's going to be fun again. I really enjoy it. It's fun. I appreciate it, guys. And you know, I'm really glad I only got a couple of those cowboy questions. But
well, you know, I have noticed how big your feet and your hands are, and I think you're pretty quick. So I'll just leave it. I'll talk to you more on the phone, or we'll hang out later. Who knows? I know what room you're in.
He basically could cover Roger's whole body with his hand a minute ago. Just completely disappeared.
Well, yeah.
Hey, listen, everybody, today, you know, Mark, we're very fortunate to get Mark in. This is close to football season for the Touchdown Club, so let's go out there and welcome him over at the Peabody Hotel today at lunch. We're
looking
forward to
him a big Arkansas.
Tell me you got a star tattoo somewhere.
I don't have a
tattoo. Like right on the back, on your back.
I've got scars all over. I don't have a tattoo.
Please don't hit him on the air.